Hey guys, welcome to Debunked, our podcast where we discuss quite literally everything about anything. My name is Soman, and I'll be your host today along with
Kailash.
And today we have two guest speakers with us, Nick, who has already been on this podcast once before, and Rohan. So without further ado, let's begin. Hey guys, you obviously know that today we're going to be discussing about change and how, you know, what's the natural human reaction to it and whether or not we're innately resistant to it. You know, this was an interesting topic brought up by one of our members in a previous episode where, you know, we kind of examined how that has impacted geopolitical relations and, like, you know, people's political affiliations in general, and how that might have resulted partly in the Capitol riot and, you know, more radicalized ways of thinking. So yeah, I just want to kind of get started on that. What do you guys think about human behavior and change? Do you think we're innately opposed to it or not, and why?
I think in the beginning phase, we're a bit more resistant towards change. And I think it's because if you're making a change with your normal life, you're not 100% sure what's the outcome going to be. And I think that a level of uncertainty is something that many people are afraid of.
Okay.
Absolutely, Nick. I completely agree with you. I think change had a lot of fear, and you can see, like, people who want to start their own company, people who, you know, want to move across the country. And, like, because of the change and, like, the change of landscape, the change of career, change of whatever they do going to end up doing in life, the fear of change kind of, like, prevents them from doing so. So I think obviously there's going to be some resistance to change, but once you're able to get past that resistance to change, then it's just smooth sailing from there on out.
That's interesting because I myself am a big believer in, like, people being afraid of change. But, you know, in general, that can have, like, very different outcomes. You know, it's not always cut and dry where you come in, or, you know, you are always able to adapt at the end of the day. Because, like, as we've seen in modern day, where people might not even necessarily be afraid of change, but they're just, you know, clinging on to their ideals so much that they're not willing to change. They're kind of like, think of it as like a truck that's not willing to, you know, kind of change its direction and take a turn or something. It's just going in a straight path, you know, kind of relentlessly charging on, that type of thing. So what do you guys think about that? You know, like, clinging on to ideals, is that maybe a big concern for, like, people who might be trying to change?
I think the idea that the world is more changing, and because the world is changing around them, like, the world's more moving, more towards an autonomy-based economy. And while, like, jobs are diminishing, especially in, like, the Midwest, what you see is you don't see those blue-collar workers anymore because they often get replaced by machines, and they often lose jobs because of it. So you see the fear of the autonomy, the fear of autonomy, right? Therefore, you are scared of what's going to happen because you're losing your job. Therefore, you get what I'm trying to say, fear.
Yeah. Okay, so that's interesting. Yeah, go on.
But because the idea is that you're going to lose your job, you have to find something else to do when you've already been doing this one thing for at least 20 to 30 years of your life. So you were so held on to this idea, and it's like your livelihood and your way of life. Therefore, if it changes, then you have to find something new to do, and that finding something new to do is often what scares people in the short run, in the long run.
So what you're essentially kind of saying is, like, people like sticking to kind of like a status quo type of situation, as opposed to, you know, possibly trying out something new because it's associated with a level of uncertainty that they may not be comfortable with immediately.
Exactly. Word for word what I'm trying to say, but in shorter term.
Okay. Yeah. So I feel like fear of uncertainty, I'm mumbling here. uncertainty. Fear of uncertainty is a little bit kind of, you know, damaging to a society when you think of it, right? Like, when you think about, let's just take, for example, America in general as like a democracy, you know, with all of its citizens. A fear of uncertainty obviously would kind of stop America from trying to make, you know, progress continuously. You know, after a while, people will just be happy with sticking with the status quo. Or actually, people are even going to be fine being unhappy and still living in a status quo situation rather than, you know, daring to kind of change things around because they're so uncertain of what is to come.
So I think that's the result of, you know, feeling safe, right? So some people take jobs, right, because the job offers them safety. Mm-hmm. And you have, like, you're able to provide for your family, right? As opposed to like taking a job that's uncertain, you know, you're scared of what's to come. Like, you're scared that, what if one day I wake up and I'm not able to provide for my family? What if one day I wake up and I can't pay my bills on time, right? So that's why, like, when change does happen, people are going to be scared of it, regardless of what the change is, because if at the end of the day, people are selfish and they want to provide for them and their family as opposed to anyone else, regardless of how the change can benefit the world on a global scale.
That's interesting. Does this apply to all humans in general, or would it just be like a majority of people? And, you know, it's kind of like a barrier which some people can overcome.
I think this is specific to kind of, I think, majority of people that we interact with. I think in terms of people that have grown up in Western countries like the US, the UK, and things like that, I think we all have a pretty similar outlook. But I think in other smaller villages and other towns, even if we look at, you know, India, Ethiopia, and things like that, I don't think they'll have the exact same rationale. But definitely hitting on what Rohan really said is that idealistically, we are pretty selfish as people. Even though that sounds pretty negative, it has some good side, because you're trying to build an opportunity, not just really for yourself, but also in hopes of for your family, and also in hopes of creating something that could possibly be generational. But into doing so also can be done outside of your comfort zone. And for a lot of people, that can be very fearful.
Okay. So I feel like, yeah, the selfish thing I do agree with to a certain extent, because, you know, people are at the end of the day looking out for themselves, and especially in the modern world, that's holding to be pretty true. But for me personally, what I think is that people should kind of, at the end of the day, and this might be a little bit idealistic in what I hope the world to be, but people should try and, you know, look to do what's right for everybody in general, rather than, you know, what is easy and what is good for themselves. And because I feel like that will just kind of help make society better at adapting to situations, better at, you know, progressing forward as a society. I don't know, but I think it might be a little too idealistic. Is there any scope for that happening in the future?
Like, humans,
like, people eventually kind of getting to a point where they're looking out for others above themselves, which in turn would kind of allow for change to come about more easily.
I don't believe so, because at the end of the day, it's about one thing, and it's about providing for yourself, right? You always have to provide for yourself before you can provide for anyone else. And therefore, because of that idea and that's the way I think I have to live in order to just be successful and be able to, like, continue my life in the future, I'll provide for myself before I provide for anyone else, is the reason why I think that won't happen.
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think the chance of it happening is really slim to none. And I think it really starts off with a base that we live in a capitalist society. And I'm not bashing capitalist societies. I think it's one of the best economic systems. But at the end of the day, there's always going to be someone that gets the end of the stick in a capitalist society. Someone that can't lift their own weight, that's not able to put in the right amount of work, is going to be at the bottom totem pole. And it's really due to how they've lack of being able to capitalize on situation to some degree.
Okay.
Yeah, I have to say I agree with Nick here. At the end of the day, like, even beyond capitalism, as a species, we're intended to protect our fellow humans. But at the same time, if helping other humans and helping ourselves comes into conflict, we're very selfish as a species. We're obviously going to help ourselves. And that underlying dynamic will always exist in society. There's always going to, like Nick said, there's always going to be someone who gets the short end of the stick. And society is, for lack of a better phrase, they're just not going to care about them.
Okay. Now I have a question a little bit kind of building on what you did say over there. I agree with it completely, but what I was wondering was, now sometimes, you know, personal interests could align with the greater good, you know, like when you talk about survival and on a global scale, something like that, right? So when we look at something like the climate change crisis, why do you think that there is such a drastic opposition to it, even though that is aligning with, you know, kind of preserving our planet? It aligns with everyone's interests, or like interests in terms of like the greater good. Why do you think there is such an opposition to that? Why are people so unwilling to change on their stance?
I think the reason why people are like, so with climate change, it's a sensitive topic because there's only two sides to it, right? There's either that you believe in climate change or you don't believe in climate change. And people who are opposed to climate change happening are often uneducated, and they could be educated, but they understand the fact that their jobs could be at risk, because in the Midwest, you're blue collar worker, the more vehicles you put out there, right? The more of a bigger carbon footprint you leave in the world. And that's what we're trying to do, is minimize that. So if you put in legislature that tries to minimize the carbon footprint, what's going to end up happening is you will see people lose their jobs, and they understand that. And for that reason, being selfish for them at that time, they need to survive now, not 20 years from now, not 30 years from now. That's kind of like the mindset, I would say, in why the resistance to change of climate change, or except embracing climate change per se.
Okay, so short-term survival versus long-term survival, right? That's interesting. That's very interesting way to look at it. I actually agree with that. Many people would be concerned with what their situation is now and trying to, you know, can be now versus like what it could be in the future, and whether or not it damages your situation in the future. You know, people would rather pick now. That's
Nobody wants to like live a low standard of living now, and they don't want to live a low standard of living 20 years from now. But you know, things change and everything takes time to adjust, but they would want to have at least a good standard of living now, as opposed to, you know, waiting 20 years when they might not be alive, or they have to eat like absolute nothing for the next 20 years and starve, right? To get that standard of living that we're talking about. So I think that's kind of the reason why I'm trying to say people are going to be resistant to change now, because they want to have like the safety now.
Okay. That actually is pretty valid point. Okay, so that I'd actually now like to kind of move away from climate change specifically and ask a little bit of a different question. What role do you think a person's, you know, formative years plays in terms of how accepting or how unaccepting they will be of change?
I think it plays a very big role, because where we begin, like the way we were raised, really does kind of define to a degree our entire outlooks on life and our outlooks on ourselves. And when you think of those two, it really indicates how you're going to perceive change. So for some people, as Rohan kind of hit on before, you know, if you're not working a manual labor job and you're from a very affluent family, there is no fear of change, because you kind of already have a safety blanket to a degree from your perspective. So our upbringings really does help us define the way we're going to look at the world. And depending on which social class or economic class you come from, or within the United States, it will change the way you kind of perceive making a change. Because for some people, you know, job security is a fear, but for other people, it's an advantage.
Okay.
Can you repeat the question one more time, the one you asked me?
Yeah, so what I asked was, what role do you think the formative years of a person play in their willingness to accept or possibly reject change?
You cut out again? You cut out for me. I don't know if it's just me. I heard Nick, but I didn't hear
you. Oh, okay. So, yeah, I'll repeat myself. That's no problem. So, what I asked was, what role does a person's formative years play in whether they'll be willing to accept or reject change?
Oh yeah, I think Nick put this completely on the spot, right? It's really all about how you're brought up. So someone like me who's brought up with a dad who works in computer science and mom who works in the medical field, I feel like I'm more able to feel for change as opposed to someone who is a blue collar worker, right, in the Midwest, in Detroit, where there's not that many opportunities anymore because these companies are going towards more autonomous labor. So for me, like, who has the world at my hands, who has like every opportunity to go for, because of my background and everything that's been given to me, I'm more able to take on change and more able to embrace change because of my financial makeup of my family and where I'm from. And I think also part of it is, you know, just being able to, like, where you're brought up and your education, right? So in New Jersey, we often have a liberal system, like a liberal education, while in, you know, in the Midwest, they're more conservative, and it's shown with the red states all across. And that's, I think that's also a part of it.
Interesting that you brought up the science point, because I feel like science, or like being raised with, you know, kind of like a scientific background, or people, parents or guardians who are obviously very accepting of science and kind of pass it on to their children. Growing up in that kind of environment, personally, I think is one of the biggest, you know, factors that determines whether or not you will be accepting of change. Because generally, people raised in a scientific background, they're for lack of a better word, they're skeptics, but they're skeptics in the sense that they will try and assert their point, but they will yield once valid data or once another valid point is presented, you know? So they're more accepting of a different idea if there is sufficient evidence to support it, versus something where, you know, you may not have a very scientific background, or you might not be introduced to science nearly as much as someone else. You might be relying on other forms of rhetoric to convince you. Maybe something like, you know, pathos, where you're kind of more emotionally driven and you need some sort of emotional call to convince you of a different point. So something like that is what I feel kind of is the difference between whether or not you will be accepting of change at the end of the day. Because not even necessarily your affluence, in my opinion, will determine as greatly whether you're accepting of change or not, as compared to whether or not you've been properly educated in something like science.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I think it's really a matter of, like you said, your upbringing, and whether your upbringing taught you to be critical of something, but also more susceptible to evidence, as opposed to just the appeals to pathos or to ethos. And that's one of the big problems, right? Like we discussed last week, that would be something for education. But overall, that's maybe one of the main reasons why people are not accepting of changes, because they don't see the evidence needed to substantiate those claims, right?
Mm-hmm. That's pretty much what I was going for. So that actually kind of ties back to something interesting I did over this past week, where I conducted a poll on Instagram where I asked whether or not people think humans are innately resistant to change or not. And I got some mixed responses, actually. There's like two main schools of thought, which is basically, yes, they are innately kind of resistant to change, and no, they do what will best suit them, and, you know, they can adapt to different situations depending on what's happening. Now, both are actually quite valid schools of thought, and here's my take on this. So what I think is, like, it's kind of like a mix of both of them. It's a very gray area, kind of in between both, that people will initially be resistant to change, and now tying back to the upbringing point, but, you know, their willingness to change after a certain argument has been presented really ties back to how they've been brought up.
So the way I thought of this, if humans are resistant to change, so it's the weirdest way to think about it, but I thought about it in the Indian love marriage, Indian love and arranged marriage sense, right? And it's funny to say this to me, but, you know, when my grandparents got married, right, they were all arranged marriages, right? Mm-hmm. And when my parents got married, it was an arranged marriage. But it wasn't entirely like an arranged marriage. They were, like, before my parents got married, they were on a couple of dates, then decided to get married. But they were still set up by the parents. But now with my generation, and I guess I'm assuming our generation as a whole, like an Indian American in the United States, you know, my grandparents have been more okay with the idea that, hey, listen, my grandkids will have love marriages, right? And I think that's, like, the way I see it. So, like, at first, like, all right, maybe, like, they didn't want change. And, like, my great-grandparents were, like, the same way with all my cousins. But initially, you don't want change because you just see what works and that's going to end up happening. But then over time, you're going to see, like, all right, this also works, this also works, this also works. And you're going to see, like, all right, now we're okay with it because we've seen it work over and over again, and that's why change. That's why you're okay with the change.
That's actually interesting because, like, it's also relatable now that I'm able to understand this, because, like, it's pretty much the same situation with my parents and my grandparents. So, you know, it pretty much makes sense to me personally, and a lot of our viewers are also probably going to be able to relate to this. So, yeah, that's actually a very nice point you brought up. So, you know, people do gradually change. It's just, like, the speed varies. And that might depend on how your, you know, what your ideals are.
Yeah, I think definitely hitting off Rohan's really great example that he just gave is that for that change to occur, it starts off with kind of, like, that one person kind of, like, breaks the cycle. And I think the question for us is, like, who is that person going to be? And why are they kind of prompted to do so?
Yeah, that's also a very, very valid point. Usually what I think, though, is, like, what prompts people to do so is maybe a major life event, if nothing else. You know, something that, like, kind of shakes things up very, very radically and kind of, you know, gives you a new outlook on life in some senses.
So I watched a movie last night. It's called The Banker on Apple TV Plus, and it's a Anthony Mackie movie with Samuel L. Jackson, and it's about, like, how these two guys. So one of them from, like, a small town in Texas during the Jim Crow South, and what ended up happening was, so this guy goes to LA, and he partnered up with the character that Samuel L. Jackson played, and they take over a section of Los Angeles real estate market, right? And they're, like, starting to give loans and give homes and, like, for black folks, for colored folks, and mostly white Los Angeles. And what they ended up doing was, at the end of the movie, which was, I think the whole point of it, was that they went back to this small town in Texas, and they bought a bank. And I bring that up because so this guy, they were two pioneers, and they bought a bank in the middle of small town Texas in Jim Crow South, just to invoke change and wanted to, like, hey, give black business, African Americans opportunities to own businesses, to buy homes, and provide for their families, which was not presented in the past because, you know, at that time, African-Americans weren't even allowed to go inside the bank. So that's part of the reason. And I think the motivation of those two guys were, all right, we just want to make change because, you know, some things are just wrong and we just need to, like, you know, change. And it's also like a pride thing. Like, you want to see your own people succeed and you want to help people. So that's where I think change can come from. Like those pioneers are more so people who just want to see things for the better of the world.
That's actually a very, very good example as well. You've given two pretty good examples there. So, yeah, pioneers also play a very big role in that. That's interesting, though. So while you were mentioning that point, it kind of prompted me to think along the lines of now how fast change can be implemented in society. And I just wanted to get to know your guys' thoughts on whether or not the rate of change kind of increases as time goes on. Like, as time progresses, you know, change can get implemented faster and faster. Or maybe it's always the same. Is it stagnant or is it, like, variable?
So I think the way, like, if you put it on a graph, it would be very slow, like, upward curving, and then eventually just goes full on, like, straight up. And I say that because in the beginning, nobody's like want change, right? No, like, I think people usually want things to stay the same. But once change happens and once they see the benefits of the change, then everybody wants to have that change. So that's the way I put it. And I think that's like the best way to put it together. You know, nobody really initially wants change, but eventually everyone deals with the change and they take it on the right.
So kind of like a snowball effect. So, like, gradually accumulates more and more snow as it goes on.
Exactly. And those who don't accept or don't take on, aren't okay with the change, then they would probably get tumbled over by the snowball.
That is pretty interesting. So, do you think that change might actually happen inadvertently and, like, the wrong way at sometimes? Because what I've seen, like, now that you're talking about how change positively implement, like, we've been talking about change being positively implemented, but, like, let's talk about change being negatively implemented in society and how that might kind of snowball into something much worse. So, and I have, like, a very kind of generalized example over here. Over the past 4 years, we've seen a more, like, a higher rate of people kind of showing up and believing in more radicalized ideas. Many people blame it on, like, social networking and Facebook and how they're targeted and gradually are radicalized in the process where, you know, they get involved with groups of people who are may believe in something delusional, like flat earth. You've seen, like, an increase in the number of flat earthers out there, right?
Yes.
Like, and
unfortunately,
exactly, like, yeah. The funny part is, and I'm not kidding, but, like, just this past week, because our name is debunked, people get the wrong idea of our podcast, right? They think we're some sort of conspiracy debunking podcast, which is kind of our fault. We should have picked a better name, but we got reached out by this one flat earth podcast that's appeared on, like, a bunch of other conservative shows, and they were asking us to, like, challenge them over flat earth. Like, the most bizarre thing, right? And apparently they have amassed thousands and thousands of viewers while I was checking their credentials. Obviously we didn't accept, but still, it's kind of concerning that many people are, more and more people are kind of, you know, giving into these delusions, even though, you know, there's valid evidence against it. People are changing because I don't know why.
Well, I think the biggest reasoning there... Oh, my bad, Rohan, you could go. I feel like I've been talking forever. Appreciate you, bro. But yeah, I think first and foremost, like, today's day in nature, we have the ability that we can search up whatever we want and we can be around people that agree with us for whatever reason. But the thing is, the biggest foundation of really science is to challenge thought and to challenge it over time and time again. But in terms of like the flat earth theories, is I could Google right now, you know, some documents that may agree with me, but that never actually means that they're correct. And in terms for a lot of those people, it's that you're falling into kind of a closed mindset when it really should be open. And usually in terms of trying to have a conversation with people that are very fixed minded, is that it's either it's their way or you're not even the opposition. You're like a not a good person because you don't agree with them, even though at the end of the day, the two are trying to come to the same goal, but it's kind of like different ways of getting there.
That's interesting because when you think about it, especially in today's information age where like everything is available on the internet, and you know how confirmation bias kind of skews people's points, do you think that the internet may have impacted the ability of change being implemented in society? Because if you think about it, back in the 70s or 80s, like protest movements were able to be pretty convincing in terms of, you know, bringing change, and governments, you know, usually would oblige. But now, today, you see protest movements take place, and there's always two schools of thought about it. You know, one, a more echo chambered version where someone is thinking something that's completely baseless but somehow still gets an audience, and two, which is what's actually happening, and you know, yet nothing actually gets implemented at the end of the day. Do you think like the internet might have hindered or bettered the ability of change to be implemented?
It kind of goes both ways, because even though there's countless downsides to also social media and the internet, there's also a plus side too, that you can, as I kind of said before, is that you have the ability to connect with people that are like-minded, and you're able to see more content of people that you genuinely kind of like and that you gravitate towards. So in terms of pushing certain agendas like Black Lives Matter, you know, you're able to create newer and much bigger communities than before, which being your community was only your specific physical location. But the downside of it is that at times you may not ever challenge your claim or challenge your own argument or perspective with others out there, because you may not see them, because the only thing you follow are pages that agree with your perspective.
So Kailash, you were also going to say something about that, and I do like your point, Nick, over there, but I want to also hear what Kailash wants to say.
Yeah, I also have to agree with Nick here, because the thing is, like, there's two sides to it. You can better communicate with the people that you agree with or that you have similar viewpoints with, and you know, you can do things like organize protests much easier compared to, you know, 30-40 years ago. But people who don't share the same viewpoint as you, who may be opposed to you, they can also do that. And if one of those sides is misinformation, like, of course misinformation will be able to spread much faster. So it's really like a double-edged sword, because this has helped us connect to basically anyone anywhere on Earth within a matter of a few seconds. But at the same time, it's allowed the spread of dangerous misinformation in many cases to also reach people in a matter of seconds. And, you know, people are not educated as to how to question such misinformation, then they might fall into that trap. And of course, that's like, that's not good.
So that's interesting. You mentioned miseducation and misinformation as well over there. And yeah, both of you, what you said, the one point you guys made is pretty valid. So what I would ask is like kind of like a concluding question is that in today's day and age, you know, everything kind of seems pretty chaotic, and you know, it seems like things aren't changing for the better, even though people are trying, or they're not changing for the better fast enough. And there's a lot of causes for why that's not happening, the internet being one of them. You know, the opposing side is able to, you know, create a stronger resistance. But what do you think that there is a solution to this? Maybe mass, like kind of reform in education, teaching people to think critically again, especially in today's day and age, or something a little bit different? I don't know. I want to hear your ideas.
So I think it also depends on what generation we brought up in, right? So my grandfather's in like 5 WhatsApp groups, and they spam his phone every day. And he believes in almost everything that those WhatsApp groups send him, right? Because, like, it's on the internet. He's like, how can it not be real? Like, if there's a video of it, then how can it not be real? So that's, like, my grandfather's thinking. And I think that's also part of the much of the older people's thinking. And that's why you see, like, that's why they're often, like, conflicted between them. So what ends up happening is, because there's so much confusion for the older generation, it won't happen with us, because by the time we get to my grandparents' age, like 50, 60 years down the line, we will already be so, like, in technology, not technologically advanced in comparison to them, that we already understand what is there. So I think once that ball rolling, because we just got into information age and now it's going on and on, I think it will, like, eventually you'll see a change occur.
Okay, so does anyone else have any maybe different ideas as well? Because I agree with how things might change for the better eventually, but again, I'm not 100% certain. You know, it's kind of, again, very unpredictable. For me personally, I don't know if there is like a set thing you can say about how things will change or whether people will adapt to this or not. But, like, if there's anything we can do to kind of help instigate that or help make it better personally.
I definitely agree with what Rohan said. I think another thing we could personally make the change is when we search for information, always to look at other sites and resources too. So I know something that, at least at JP, that our teachers tell us all the time, is if you're ever looking towards an article, always look towards the opposite. So you want to also look at CNN, but you also want to look at Fox News, because in the middle is the truth. And it's unfortunate that this is kind of the perspective we need to have, that these are two publications that are supposed to give us relevant information, but sometimes the relevancy can be skewed due to opinion. And that's where our society kind of needs to go back towards, is kind of the facts instead of our opinions all the time.
That's interesting. Like how you mentioned, look at the opposite as well. Maybe look at things kind of like as an average to kind of form your own opinion on something. Yeah, so that's interesting, because like it kind of ties to math in some sense even. Which is very, very interesting. I actually agree with that. Yeah, now that I come to think of it, I hadn't thought of it that way before. You could examine multiple sources and kind of find a middle ground where you can find places where, you know, everyone agrees on, or not agrees on, but something that's neutral. Okay, so that's actually a very good point. I think we should end off over there, because that definitely gives people something to think about. Before we leave off, there's a really quick word from our sponsors. So stay tuned for our next episode, where we will discuss something new and break down everything for you. It would be appreciated if you guys could drop us a like and write us a review on your preferred platforms. Go check out our website for more information and check us out on Instagram. Share our podcast with your friends if you liked it. We're really grateful for those of you who've been tuned in so far, and we hope you guys can grow along with us on this journey wherever it takes us. And hit that outro!